Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Tony, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
I'm here about the business. Ain't that right, Joe?
Joe Madden.
He's got that flair about him. When his name's announced, the place erupts all the time, but he's always in the middle of something good.
Manager for the Chicago Cubs.
And then Cliff and Shelley, the Penguins. I mean, all this stuff, the Penguins, like, pooped all over. They poop every 15 minutes, apparently. That's what Penguins do. All over the brand-new rug on the other side. That's what's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, I learned a lot from watching Joe.
Joe Madden with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Okay, nice.
Joe Madden's show is presented by Magellan Corporation. Joe joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. And now we get the opportunity to talk with the manager of your Chicago Cubs to open up the show. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Good afternoon, sir. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing really well. I mean, this is a fun little run that your team is on right now. And it's something that you've been pointing to on the show for the last couple of weeks, feeling like a run like this is in there. So to see your team rattle off five in a row, to see them jump to the highest record that they've had as far as games above 500, how does this make you feel about the last 2 weeks of the season?
Well, in spite of all of our difficulties, we are playing pretty well. And again, the run's been in the offense. The offense has been spectacular. The entire homestand with Pittsburgh and them again last night. We're missing some really key components, obviously, but guys are filling these holes very well. Without Anthony and Javi in there, you look what Nico's doing right now. Caratini's picked up a lot of the load, and Schwarber's driving in a bunch of runs, which is really a nice progress for him. Bullpen holding their own, all that good stuff. So hey, it's one at a time. We've got another Sonny Gray pitching for them tonight. He's been really tough on us. He's been tough on everybody all year, so this is a good test for us.
What's the impact of Rizzo being injured when it comes to how you're going to mix and match the lineup between first base and catcher or first base and third base?
Yeah, it's going to be primarily first base and catcher. It's not easy. I mean, listen, missing Riz is, because he also impacts our defense. But both Ian Happ and Caratini have both played well at first base since Anthony's been out. So it's going to be mixing and matching. It's going to, you know, we were missing Riz in that leadoff spot, but then again, last night Zoe stepped in there really well. You don't like not playing regular season and postseason games without Anthony and Javi. So hopefully, both of them will get well.
How important is it in your mind? Because I know in football, a lot of times when a guy's injured, that they don't want that guy around. But for you, and there's been a history of this, when Schwarber was injured, you guys had him inside the clubhouse, and he was still around the team. How important is it for Rizzo to stay with the team throughout all of this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. You're right. There are certain guys that need to be around. Sometimes it can just be based on a service time, quite frankly. A younger player versus a guy that's been around has been a big part of what you've done. All the conversation matters, and that's why I like policies, but sometimes you have to be flexible just based on common sense. So, of course, we want Riz there. Of course we do. Of course we want Javi there. Of course. So that's just the way this thing works. I'm a policy guy. I'm not a hard and fast rule guy. I think everything should be up for interpretation. But if you create a rule, then you have to kind of live and die by it. But in this situation, we want Anthony to be around and hopefully accelerate his healing pace.
You've been through this with the Cubs, your entire career with the Cubs, and obviously a lot of years with the Rays too. What's it like to manage inside of a pennant race?
Love it. It's a lot of fun. Well, listen, this is what you aim for on an annual basis. You want to make sure that these games mean something at this time of the year. There's nothing worse. When you get to this point of the year and the games have absolutely zero meaning whatsoever, it's just an awkward method. It's just it's not as much fun, quite frankly. And you're a professional. You go out there, you do your job. Of course you do, and you play, and you play hard. Of course you do. But that fun factor is missing. So to be pertinent this time of the year matters to us. It matters to the fan base. It matters to everybody affiliated with the Chicago Cubs. I think it's outstanding.
How do you stay tunneled on what your team is doing while simultaneously figuring out what's going on with the Nationals and Milwaukee and St. Louis and everyone else?
We have a big scoreboard, and it's right in my face the whole game, so I have no choice, and I'm fine with that. But at the end of the day, it's about us. We take care of our own businesses. This will all work out well for us in the conclusion. So, yeah, you look at the scoreboard, but it's about Cubs winning. And if the Cubs win, I really sincerely believe that the rest of this stuff will take care of itself.
Would you prefer that those scores are not on while you're playing?
No. It's just it's reality. You'd probably say, hey, go check on the such and such game. No, it doesn't. It doesn't matter. Sometimes it could work to your advantage. In a way, if a game's concluded and you know the other team lost, does that inspire you? I don't know. It is what it is, man, and it's part of the landscape. But I've always been a scoreboard watcher from the beginning of the season.
Cubs manager Joe Maddon joining me here on The Score as we discuss the way things have gone for the Cubs. They've won 5 in a row. They'll play tonight. We will have that game against the Reds starting at 6:30 here on The Score. A couple guys I want to talk about offensively, and I don't mean this to slight anyone else because I have a ton of affection for Javi and for Rizzo and for Hayward, but there's something about when Bryant gets on one of these benches that makes you guys extra dangerous. I don't know how to describe it other than that, Joe, but when he's in a binge like this, your lineup just looks monstrous.
He probably bench hits as well as anybody that we have. I think you're right. When he gets this toasty, it stays for a while. He normally doesn't go in and out of these phases. So when he's like this right now, he's putting on the barrel. It's kind of like Castellanos. I mean, you can't discount what Nicklaus has done. I mean, he's been binging the whole since time he's been here. But when KB gets rolling, the ball ends up in the seats. He gets big hits. And then again, it's just about his whole game. How about the play made last night, that dive to his left? So right now, confidence-wise, he's at the zenith of his confidence. But there is. I mean, 16, whatever, he gets rolling, man. Normally good things do occur.
It seems like after the cortisone shot, that knee seems to be okay for him right now. I know that you were talking about that just sometimes feeling like a little twinge here or there, and it changes the way that you have an at-bat. Does he look like, both defensively and offensively, a guy that's a little bit better off?
He's not guarding. You know, that's the thing when you're expecting pain at the conclusion of a physical action. There's kind of that moment, that hesitation, that lack of fluidity that you normally see. And right now, it's just swings looking all that. How about like the one-hand Fred Homer to left, down and away slider on, like, I saw the replay, it was like on the line, on the box, and he gets to one-handedly and gets the ball in the barrel and it goes out. I don't think with the knee bothering him that he puts himself in that position to hit that particular pitch. So some of these pitches that he's reached for in the past would be rollover ground balls to third, but now they're going into the outfield over the wall. So that I definitely believe there's a direct correlation between that and how well his knee is feeling.
With Kyle Schwarber, it's weird to say this, but to say that he's been doing this quietly, you know, the 19 home runs in the second half, his OPS in the second half of the season is close to 950. I know that we talked a little bit about it over the last couple of weeks, but why does he look more centered at the plate this second half of the season than he looked in the first?
Because he's better mechanically, period. First half, he was really leaking out a lot, getting heavy on his front side, a lot of drifting with his head in his bottom half. And when you do that, you can't stay behind the baseball consistently. With that, also out and around the ball, hooking a lot of ground balls to the pool side. Now, think about it. If you've watched him, and I know you have recently, a lot of really well-struck balls to left center, left field. He's hit, I think, one or two balls hard down the right field line, but they weren't rollovers. They were like line drives. So I think primarily the difference is where he's at in the box physically. And watch when he's in concluding his swing, like the home run he hit last night. Watch how he hits the ball and he could just stand there for 5 seconds if he chose to because his balance is so great. And that's because he's not leaking forward. So it's really been a nice physical adaptation on his part. It's something that I thought he's been capable of doing all along, but he wasn't. And now he is. And look at the RBIs. See, that's the part of his game that I know he's been wanting to get better at. And what he's done there is spectacular, too.
When the pupil is ready, the teacher will appear, right?
Always, man, always. You know, you got to keep being redundancy. Teaching is being redundant. And sometimes when you get redundant with the guy or player or pupil, whatever, they're thinking like, my God, he just told me that yesterday. Does he think I'm stupid? Well, no, but you got to hear it again. And then eventually it just it infiltrates. It gets into your substance somehow. And then you say, when you start doing it right, then you'll say, oh, that's what he meant. And I'm saying that from personal experience as a young baseball player with some coaches I had back in with the Angels. And they're trying to get me to do almost the same thing, stay behind the ball. And finally, one day, I felt everything. I'm thinking to myself, ah, that's what they meant. And it's a combination of knowing or hearing and understanding, but the bigger component is feeling.
How satisfying is it as an instructor for you and your staff when you tell a guy, hey, look, middle away, that's what we want you to do. Then they get there and then they see results. And then you're able to see their joy in seeing the results.
Yeah, listen, that's what we do. I mean, really, again, good coaching is being redundant. Good coaching is being able to say the same thing in other words, meaning that it might what I say to you, I may have to say differently than, say, Anthony Rizzo or Kyle Schwarber because the way it's said and the words utilized mean different things to different people. Semantics are so important when getting a point across. So that's why I think the best coaches are able to coach the same point by saying it in other terms, in other words, to different guys until finally it reaches and it infiltrates. And at that point, like I said, when you watch the guy and he's making the correct move and the guy tells you, yeah, I feel it, then you know you got something. But if he doesn't say, I feel it, you still haven't arrived at that point.
You brought up Castellanos. His Wrigley Field splits are pretty amazing. When you start talking about a guy who's hitting above 400 in the, 21, 22 games that he's played at Wrigley Field. On top of that, he's got, 55 doubles on the season, which is insane. Is there a player that you can think of that he reminds you of?
Well, I mean, the way he stays inside the baseball. And again, that's the tried and true method. That's what I've been talking about as the opposed to just trying to launch angle everything. He gets the barrel to the ball because he stays inside it. It's no secret why the ball's on the lines and the gap's hard because he gets the barrel to the ball. He exposes the thick part of the bat to the baseball, and he doesn't get long and sweepy with his arms trying to lift everything, although he's able to put the ball in the air well. Like I said, Edgar Martinez, J.D. Martinez, Miguel Cabrera, they've had that kind of approach in the past. That's the for me the try. Jimmy Edmonds like that. I had Garrett Anderson like that. They were all inside the ball approach, kind of a Timmy Salmon at fish. All these guys were really able to work from the pull gap to the opposite field line. And to me, that's the best way to do it. And that's why he's so successful, man. All this guy does is hit gaps in lines. He doesn't roll over very often because he stays inside the ball, which puts his hands in a better position to drive the ball to the entire field.
What's been going on with your rotation? I mean, obviously, Hendricks' last start was really great. Darvish has been fantastic in the second half. But the other guys seem to have struggled. Is there anything that you can put your finger on why they're struggling?
For me, it's counts, bad counts. I just like to see, talking about Johnny and Cole and Q, just get more aggressive, assertive in the count. I think, meaning get to, 0-1, 1-2. So start dominating the 1-1 count again. I think we've just been a little bit too fine trying to make pitches and being a little bit less primal. To be a great pitcher, I think you have to be both. You have to have that fine-tuning ability. But this time, you just got to be primal and convicted in your pitch. And so I think that's primarily it. Like last night, having to get Cole so early and having to get Q so early the night before, I mean, man, that puts you talk about your bullpen work. So you got to really compliment guys that don't get the credit, Chatwood and Alec Mills. I mean, last night, my goodness, both those guys really kept these games in order. That's why the Cubs win, and these guys have not gotten nearly enough credit. Rowan Wick was outstanding last night, of course, but Chatwood and Alec Mills primarily won the last two games.
You read my mind, because you start looking at bullpen ERA, and your team has done really well with a lot of moving parts and guys being in and out, and you've had really kind of no closer for a big portion of the season either. What does that say about them that you're at this place now where there are a lot of different guys that can be relied on?
Well, yeah, they've been put in a lot of, and I didn't even mention Kyle Ryan. They've been put in a lot of situations they're not used to on this level, and they've responded well. It means a lot. I mean, moving forward, I mean, for us and for them, what it means, I mean, to create this kind of depth with Kimbrough's right on the horizon, too. We have a simulated game with them this afternoon, and that just creates an even greater depth. But, the mind once stretched, it's difficult to go back to the original form. All these guys are getting this really high-leverage moment in playoff situation, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful to watch their ascension. And Brad Wick, Holson, these guys have got really good arms also. And so the bullpen's been somewhat maligned, but I'm telling you, Cishek coming back, we're trying to get Kinsler back. Just put all these names together, we could do a lot of different things.
What do you look for when a player's coming back from injury in a sim game? What pops your eye, and what things need to be accomplished in those sim games?
Well, with the pitcher, obviously, it's just the fact that there's no restriction in his arm stroke, that he's not holding back, he's not guarding, would be probably the hot buzzword with that. So that he's just letting it go, that the arm stroke looks free and easy. There's a little finish on the ball at home plate. Those are the kind of things that we'll be looking at today. And then the pitcher himself is going to let you know in this situation. When you talk to him afterwards, if there's an easy smile and there's no trepidation, he's probably doing just fine. He's feeling good, and everything's going to be wonderful. But if there's any kind of hesitant thought on the guy's part, then you got to be a little bit more careful, because that means he was feeling something that he's really not wanting people to know. But sometimes they just reveal themselves in that way.
My colleague Dan Bernstein brings up the idea of the Wrigley Field as an emotional amplifier. I think it's a really good way to talk about Wrigley Field. What's winning at Wrigley Field, especially this time of the season, like?
Oh, wow. I mean, I think I've talked about that since I've been here. Nothing like it. There's nothing like it. I think it's the best venue in all of sport. I don't care if you talk about college football stadiums, Major League Baseball stadiums, NFL. Like, you could talk to all these soccer venues, whatever, although I have not been to all of them. But there's nothing like Wrigley Field, man. I mean, you're in a neighborhood, and this ballpark's been existing there for 100 years, and the way that it's the redo, the refresh, it's been unbelievable. And then you get all of that, but then you put our fans in there. Nobody's like that. Like I said, I haven't experienced the soccer venues, and I would imagine that would be the closest rivalry to this, to our place. But there's no venue like Wrigley. It's a combination of the edifice, the structure, and the people that attend. The building and our fans provide the energy.
All right, Joe, I had a lot of people reach out via Twitter last night because I said we need more questions for Joe's Box. And Cubs fans obliged with some really good questions. So I got a couple I want to run at you before I let you go. You ready?
Cool. Yes, sir.
What is something that most people learn only after it's too late?
The grass isn't always greener, brother. It's not always greener. I mean, we always think it's a better something somewhere else. And that's the one thing I learned early on. The grass is not always greener on the other side of the fence. It's an old concept or thought, but I think that most people do believe that. You need to make best of what you got and where you're at in your existence. And when you're always wishing and hoping, don't wish and hope your life away, man. Live the present tense. If you're always living in the future, brother, this whole thing blows right by you. And that's a sad existence. So the grass isn't greener, and please live in the present tense.
This one's from Steve, and he asks, which dad character would you want to play if you could reboot any sitcom?
Any sitcom? Well, you know, back in the day, I think of Father's Knows Best. Really, I think it was his last name was Young. And I think of Leave It to Beaver. Ward Cleaver was solid, man. I really liked it. I don't know, Ward Cleaver. I mean, that was one of that show. And Andy Griffin. Andy was solid, too.
He was really, now that I go back and I watch some of that stuff, like, and Ron Howard has put out a bunch of it. Andy was really ahead of his time with some of his thoughts on people and equality and all sorts of stuff.
He was. He was. Sheriff Andy Taylor had all that going. Of course, he had to deal with Barney every day. It's not easy to have to put up with Barney and all his exploits and Aunt Dee and the whole thing.
And I mean, Otis?
I loved Otis, man. We got one in our clubhouse. Our club, his name is Otis. And I mean, I'm not talking about being in a drunken cell, but I love the craziness. Our Otis versus their Otis. Okay, it's a toss-up between Wirt Cleaver and Andy Griffin. I think... And like you're saying, you made some good points. You might have taken me over the edge. I'm going to go with Andy Taylor.
All right, I like that. That's good. All right, so here's another question. This is from Aaron. This is the tap into your artistic side here, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite artists, contemporary and historically.
Wow. I'm not the best at that. I mean, Da Vinci is so fascinating. And Michael, I mean, these are the guys, maybe it's my Italian background, but just to go to Italy and when you walk up on the statue, David, you are absolutely blown away that anybody can do that. And then to walk into the Sistine Chapel and just sit there quietly and look up at the ceiling. Come on. I mean, you could talk about, you know, Renoir, Rembrandt, whatever. I also love Dali. I think this guy was an absolute brilliant genius. My God, Picasso. But at the end of the day, have you ever seen the Sistine Chapel?
I've never been there.
My thought was that there's just by sitting there, there's proof that there is a God just by sitting there and just sitting on a bench and looking up at that. How else could this guy have possibly done that? I mean, he walked up there, 4 years, whatever it was, 5 years daily. He walks in and walks up the steps. He goes up there to his... on a scaffolding. Of course, he had some help, but how do you have the perseverance and the ability, the intelligence, the genius with the scope of this whole thing? How do you do that? So that Michelangelo and then Da Vinci with all his inventions. So those two dudes really resonate for me.
One more. My friend Jen DeSalvo over at NBC5, like she got in on this thing and she wanted to ask, have you ever thought about how many dogs are named after you?
Well, I have not, but there's like kids. I've noticed that via Twitter that they name their kids Madden, like that the first name would be Madden. And that's kind of like highly complimentary, obviously. And I've actually noticed more about little kids than I have babies being born than I have dogs. Either way, I mean, I'm good with it. It's highly complimentary, and it's like, really? So to those folks that have ever done that, whether it's a dog, a cat, your little girl, a little boy, or even a turtle, I say thank you.
So you like the idea of, well, I guess you could go a couple ways, like with a daughter or son, the daughter could be named Joe.
Yeah.
You could go that way or name Madden.
Yeah, they have. I've held babies that are named Madden. Yeah, it's a very humbling moment.
Joe, as always, thank you for the time. We appreciate it. Great. Congratulations. Keep it up, and we'll talk next week.
All right, brother. You be well. Thanks. Thanks, Lawrence.
That is Joe Madden, the manager of the Cubs. Grass is not always greener, Tony. It is not always greener. Texas picked up on that. So did I. I looked at my guys. They're like, oh, mark that. Mark that down. Mark that down.
It is, though, on the south side.
I mean, we can have that conversation if we ever get to that conversation. But I do appreciate everyone reaching out via Twitter with the really great questions. And you see how Joe responds to some of that stuff. Like, he thinks about it. And that's one of the reasons why I love having him on this show, man. Because he's in it. Like, he's in. A lot of times when you do shows with athletes or coaches or front office people, they're not always in it. And it becomes prosecutorial, like you're asking these questions, you're just like firing off. With Joe, you get a conversation. We've had it all season long, and I could not be happier. This text says, I absolutely tune in for Lawrence and Joe every week. I'm a Sox fan who's not anti-Cubs, who normally wouldn't pay attention to much Joe Madden interview, but is consistently must-listen radio. I agree with you because of Joe. It's must-listen because of him. And we're appreciative to have him on the show, sure.
Does that listener listen to the rest of the show, though, like during the rest of the week?
Here's what I care about. As long as you find something in the show that you dig. You don't have to listen to the whole thing, But if you come here on Tuesdays at noon just for Joe, I'm fine with that. I can live with that. Trust me. Works for me. Just stay the whole segment. That's all I ask. We need to take a break. We will get an update for you. We have a small one from Joe, but we'll get an update on Anthony Rizzo because I know people are concerned. We will do that next here on The Score. A texter enjoyed the conversation with Joe and offered this. Said that there's a book about Michelangelo and the Sistine Chapel called Michelangelo and the Pope's Ceiling. I've been looking for, ever since I finished school, like, because I was reading books like all the time, but they were journalism books. And I haven't really read anything for fun in a while. I've been focusing my attention lately. There are two things I want to do now that the grad school is over. Like the next like thing that I want to accomplish before, if and before I start a PhD program, I want to get back to playing chess again, like at a high level. I used to be okay, and now I'm not.
I've been trying to teach myself how to play chess like the last like week or so.
You just, how are you teaching yourself to do that?
Internet.com.
Okay. All right. That's fair. I mean, there's, you can learn some opening strategies and stuff like that. I used to be pretty good. I have a friend, my friend Joanne, shout out to Joanne, who is a very good player. And we've known each other for, I think, 8 years now. And I've been thinking about challenging her, even though I know she's going to kick my ass, but I don't want it to be too bad. So I got to get myself right. Now, my dad used to teach chess. I believe my record against my dad and my lifetime record against him is like 2-180, something like that. But I won the last game, and that's going to be the last game. My mom took a picture of her and everything. That's going to be the last game. I'm not going back for any more butt whippings on the chessboard from him. No. I got my two wins. One when I was 13, one when I was 39, and that's it.
Oh, that feeling of beating your own man, your old man.
And that game, great for me, man. I mean, you know, he literally teaches it. But I play like this weird, I'm bad at it, and chess people will understand what I'm talking about. I am a better player without my queen. And I mean that literally with the game.
Oh, I was about to say, okay.
Yeah. I am a back against the wall chess player. You want to see some creative chess? About 15 moves in after I lose the queen being overly aggressive. That's when I get creative, right there. Anyway. I appreciate you listening to the show. There was some news out of the Cubs clubhouse yesterday with Anthony Rizzo being put in a walking boot. Here's what the Cubs first baseman had to say about his injury and possible return.
I think, honestly, in a few days, I'm going to know more. So, I mean, the plan is to come back as soon as possible, right? Whether it's in a few, 2 days, 3 days, which very, very unlikely. But I mean, I want to play as soon as possible. So whether it's now or whether it's game one of the World Series, you know, it's, I want to play as soon as possible.
And then rest, is there any treatment that they're doing on it specifically?
The good old-fashioned rice treatment. Rest, ice, compression, elevation. So the first 20, I mean, we hit it with everything treatment-wise with the ice and flushing it and rubbing it. So I feel grateful that we kind of right away got into it. And now that with the MRI and all that, it's kind of go through the protocol now.
Anthony, I'm guessing you've had sprained ankles somewhere in your past. Have you had one like this previous?
Yeah, a long time ago. And obviously I did not get the same treatment I'm getting now as far as with the medical staff and doctors. So that took a little longer. But now with what we have to offer, I think hopefully, you know, in a few days I could be putting a lot more pressure on it and start hobbling around a little bit, and that's all I really need to do.
How painful is it?
It's it's throbbing, but you know, and just I keep my mind in better spirits and try to just be in a good mood as I can. So try to outdo that.
Yeah, you look at this as kind of a really odd year. All the injuries that this team has suffered, key players, not key players, the club is still in it. Now they've lost you.
Yeah, I mean, every year is not going to be 2016, you know, 2015. It's you have ups and downs, and you lose guys, you lose key guys. But everyone in this locker room is fully capable of carrying a heavy load at all times. So, you know, Hobby down, me down, Craig down, losing guys throughout the year. It's what teams do. It's what you go through, and I have full faith in all the guys in here to just keep playing and continue to have good at-bats and good games.
And we did get the news from Joe that Craig Kimbrell is going to throw a simulated game today. So I guess that's good news. I'll get to Rizzo in a second. Am I the only one who loves the sound of the bats rattling in the background? I love that sound.
I get distracted, but you know how my brain works.
Yes, Tony, I'm well aware. But I love that sound. Sounds like springtime, even though we're heading into fall. Bats rattling, people dropping them on the ground. Got your bag of bats with you when you go to the yard. Oh,
I'm thinking like, be quiet. It's people trying to work over here.
Am I the only one who's having a hard time toggling between football and baseball?
Nope.
So you're going through this too?
Nope.
Oh, you just giving up on baseball. Okay, yeah. That's fine.
Catch me, you're in playoff time.
It was so weird. Like, even last night, that Monday night game was trash. Just awful. Now you got another quarterback hurt. Now you're down to the third string guy? Really? That's where we're at with the Jets? And I'm sitting there, and it's just like, it's such a different pacing. And the level of emotion. I was thinking last night that MLB, they would never do this, but that their playoff schedule should be inside the window of where there's no football. But that's becoming harder and harder. What you could have done years ago is go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And now you got to go Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. Last week, I was so messed up. I remember getting home Thursday night and being like, oh, man, I'm excited. I'm just going to relax. And I was like, oh, bleep, the NFL is on again. I've watched this nonsense. And then I watch the bad quarterback play good and the good quarterback play bad. Awful, in fact. Anyway, back to Anthony Rizzo. After Rizzo spoke in the clubhouse, Theo Epstein talked about his injury. And I actually think that Theo makes it, if you're looking for some optimism, you might find it from the Cubs president.
You know, it certainly wasn't the worst possible news. He avoided any fracture. He avoided any type of damage to the joint that would require surgery. So it's just a matter of, there's a minimum amount of time when there has to, you have to just prioritize healing and let the inflammation die down and let things heal for a little bit. And then once we get past that period of time, then we can see, you know, if there are ways to manage the discomfort and if there's ways to, through taping, create some stability that gives them, you know, at least a chance to consider contributing in some way down the road, if things go really well. So there's we're not shutting any doors, but we're realistic that this was a legitimate injury that under ideal circumstances would take some time to heal. Going to.
The fact that he's a big guy, does that make it more difficult?
Yeah, I think that's, does that can, you saw how much the size of the divot he took out, and so that's, when you turn your ankle, there's always a lot of weight being borne on the part of your foot that's not supposed to for a brief second, and that's what creates the damage. So, there's inflammation, he's got to let it heal, and obviously him being so big just made the impact more severe.
Is this considered a high ankle sprain? I've heard that term
before. A lateral ankle sprain. It's on the outside of his ankle. I'm not qualified to say whether or not it's technically a high ankle sprain or not.
Would you be surprised if he's back before the end of
I'm just comfortable saying that we're not ruling it out. You know, I've seen, you know, shoot, I was there with Kurt Schilling in the doctor's office trying to figure out how to, you know, staple his ankle ligament back to the bone so he could go out there and pitch. So I'm not saying this is not an analogous situation, but I've learned never to rule anything out. But also there's injuries like this. You just have to give a requisite amount of time to let initial healing take place to even have a better idea of what's possible and what's not possible. So
the bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the Big Ten West champion Northwestern Wildcats, led by Big Ten Coach of the Year Pat Fitzgerald, host Michigan State on Saturday at 11 a.m. Tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. So there you have it. Tony was having a hard time concentrating because he kept hearing the bass and drums. And I was dancing while all this was going on. But Tony, we had already heard the Theo twice.
Yeah.
So for us, we can listen to the other stuff that's inside the sound. Like, I don't even know what song that was, but it was making me shake a tail feather.
Yeah, I know the song. I can't name it, but I know it when I hear it because I've heard it like so much like in commercials and stuff.
Boom, 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 boom. I'm all for it. I feel like Theo should do all of his press conferences underneath the speaker next time. Why not? When we come back, we're going to do a little bit of Bears with you. We'll give you Chris Emma's report, and we'll let you hear something from Matt Nagy that we were thinking about before the show that we'd like to talk about a little bit. Something that he said about his offense. We'll share that with you next here on The Score. Is this guy in your top 10, Tony?
Yeah.
Do we need to write down our top 10s and share them with the people since we were talking about it during transition? And you have to understand something. Like what I was trying to explain to you in the transition segment is that Dan's knowledge of hip hop stops when he left college. So we're talking like 1990-ish. That's the end. So he's good with everything that happened before, which is why his LL Cool J take was a bad take.
So he missed 96?
I mean, he's working here by then.
He missed Tony's lifetime.
He's pretty much, yes, your life in hip-hop, Dan, is for the most part missed.
No, I mean his life.
Well,
damn near.
I mean, he doesn't care about that either. But my point is that everything that you experience from a hip-hop, other than the major events, like he knows that Tupac and Biggie were shot. He has some understanding of who Suge Knight is.
I would like to know the timeline, like post of the events that he remembers post 1990.
Well, there's a lot of them. I'm just saying in hip hop.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
There's a podcast for you, Dan Bernstein's Hip Hop Timeline. It ends in 1990.
We'll call it Dan Takes the Fun Out of Hip Hop.
That's why, like, he's talking about Chuck D. Like, I love Chuck D too. And there's a lot of great Chuck D lines, but for most people, I'm not saying all, but for most people, Chuck doesn't reach the threshold of top 10 MC. Also, I have problematic thoughts about Tupac. So maybe I'm not the best person to discuss this.
Campy said the same thing.
Not a top 10 MC. Not a top 25 MC. Not a top 10 West Coast MC. Okay, so I don't. Did you guys able to hear my thoughts? I feel like I heard my thoughts in the headphones there for a little bit. So maybe we'll do that at some point. Like as a show, we'll compile our top 10 list, and then we'll share it with everybody. What? Why are you guys? Did Colleen offer a list? Does she have a list for us? Is that what we're gonna find out?
Maybe I'll consult her for mine. I don't know.
Don't. You're not going to like some of the things that she says. Did you get any backlash for that?
None.
None? People in the Camp family don't listen to the show?
No.
Oh, then great. Colleen can now be a character on the show, and no one's going to care.
Pretty much. I mean, like none of her family. It's odd. Like I, of all my friends and our mutual friends, not a ton of people that care about sports.
Okay. Well, then great. Then we have free reign now. Like you can talk about whatever. That's good.
I know.
It's a really good thing.
I'd have been in big trouble by now if that wasn't the case.
Yeah, you'd have been in huge trouble.
You're like, where is Rick Camp? Oh, you have to go home.
He has to go take care of some things.
I have so many friends that say, if we found out someday that, yeah, Colleen just kind of got tired of you and you were gone, like out of the picture completely, they'd be like, okay, I get it.
Yep. You got the same thing. I expect that one day I'll come home and Mel will be like, love you very much, but I went to Cuba. And that'll just be it. I'll be like, that's on brand. For her. Completely on brand for her. Our guy, Chris Emma, does Halas Hall updates for us every day, and we appreciate him. Usually I play him in the 1 o'clock hour, but I was like, you know what? Let's give Chris Emma a spin in the 12 o'clock hour. Here's his latest report from Halas Hall.
After reviewing the film from their wild win Sunday in Denver, the Bears have today off. But for Coach Matt Nagy and his staff on offense, it's an opportunity to assess the lack of production. While quarterback Mitchell Trubisky continues to scuffle, the positive was getting rookie rusher David Montgomery established into the offense. Montgomery felt he benefited from more frequent opportunities carrying the football.
You see, you know, it's like experience. You get more of it, you do better with every opportunity you get. So for me, just getting more experience and, you know, doing what I can do on the offensive side.
Trey Burton made his 2019 debut Sunday, but played in only 43% of the snaps on offense. The long week leading up to Monday night can offer Burton the chance to get closer to 100% health. The Bears pick up game week Thursday in Lake Forest. For continued coverage of the Bears, follow me on Twitter at CM670 and log on to 670thescore.com.
Emma, thank you very much. We also wanted to play this. Tony, do we have time? How long is this Matt Nagy cut? We have time to play it? All right. Want to go back to yesterday and in trying to figure out what some of the issues that the Bears offense has. This is what the head coach had to say about where things stand.
When you look at it, as far as the numbers are concerned, the stats that are in this little packet here that shows where everybody's at, whether it's points per game or yards, you know, that would reflect that we're not. But I think to us, the what matters is the why part. And I feel like for us, just looking at the tape and seeing it, that right now it's just about getting into that rhythm and them understanding the execution of the plays. And then us as coaches too, making sure that we're putting them in optimum position to make the plays with whatever the play call is made. But we're not running different plays. We're not running anything different than what we did last year. It's just it's a long season. We feel good that we got out of there with a win. We do. But just like we told you last week, after that loss, you give that 24 hours and you move on to the next week. There's a lot of teams that are 1-1 right now. Really what matters in the end, when you guys come talk to me and you ask me these questions, what matters in the end is what is just that, the end of the season, not the start. So we want to figure this thing out, and we have time to do that, and we feel like we will.
Your numbers through two games are actually an offense similar to what they did last year.
Yeah, it feels that way.
What happened last year that got it clicking? That you're hoping will happen now?
Well, in my opinion, every team, offense, defense, especially probably more offense, every team is always a little bit different each year, whether it's personnel. And even if you're in the same flavor of specific type of offense, there's going to be some factors that go into it based off of personnel that you might do different from one year to the next. So you try to figure that out. And fortunately for us, we have a pretty good defense, so we're able to kind of work through that. Now, all that said, we're at a point where we feel good, especially after last year and keeping the guys that we have right now currently. We feel good with where we're at, and I think it just comes down to, again, more rhythm and just you know, keep trusting in one another, keep fighting through it, and eventually it'll crack. And when it does, I think it's going to be pretty good.
I hope that he's right. I hope that there is the same thing that happened last year happens this year. I just think that the difference is that you've been on tape now for 20 games. And
there are no Tampas coming up.
Well, there is one coming up on Monday. Like, I expect that Mitch is going to get loose Monday night. Although, he does have the night diabetes. When you look at his numbers at night, he doesn't. I don't know that he has diabetes. I'm just saying that's what people would say about Jay Cutler. when if he had five touchdowns and nine interceptions in night games, that's what they say about Jay Cutler. But I think that there's an opportunity for Mitch to get loose on Monday. Then after that, though, there could be some problems. We'll talk with Jason Leisure about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to talk to him about his Dolphins, too.
Oh, my goodness.
And life, because we just like him. He is the star of the Hallis Intrigue podcast and our friend. He joins me next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.